Hello, and welcome to Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. In the midst of war, an ordinary miracle, an abandoned baby tenderly cared for by a young boy living on the streets of Saigon. The boy is Louis, the child of a long-gone American soldier. Louis calls the baby M. Hong, M meaning little sister or beloved. Even though her cradle is nothing more than a cardboard box, M. Hong's life holds every possibility. Through the linked destinies of a family of characters, the novel takes its inspiration from historical events, including Operation Babylift, which evacuated thousands of biracial orphans from Saigon in April 1975, and the remarkable growth of the nail salon industry, dominated by Vietnamese expatriates all over the world. From the rubber plantations of Indochina to the massacre at My Lai, Kim Three shifts through the layers of pain and trauma in stories we thought we knew, revealing transcendent moments of grace and the invincibility of the human spirit. Today's Reader's Advisory is M by Kim Thuy. M is a historical fiction title that explores the Vietnamese and Vietnamese diaspora experience from French colonization to after the Vietnam War. Told through a series of interconnected vignettes, this is a haunting, moving look into what family and immigration mean. Readers may also enjoy The Refugees by Viet Thanh Nguyen. From a young Vietnamese refugee who suffers profound culture shock when he comes to live with two gay men in San Francisco, to a woman whose husband is suffering from dementia and starts to confuse her for a former lover, to a girl living in Ho Chi Minh City whose older half-sister comes back from America, having seemingly accomplished everything she never will. The stories are a captivating testament to the dreams and hardships of immigration. Or America Is Not the Heart by Elaine Castillo. Three generations of women from one immigrant family trying to reconcile the home they left behind with the life they're building in America. How many lives can one person lead in a single lifetime? When Hero De Vera arrives in America, disowned by her parents in the Philippines, she's already on her third. Her uncle, Paul, who has offered her a fresh start and a place to stay in the Bay Area, knows not to ask about her past. And his younger wife, Paz, has learned enough about the might and secrecy of the De Vera family to keep her head down. Only their daughter, Ronnie, asks Hero why her hands seem to constantly ache. Illuminating the violent political history of the Philippines in the 1980s and 1990s and the insular immigrant communities that spring up in the suburban United States, with an uncanny ear for the unspoken intimacies and pain that get buried by the duties of everyday life and family ritual, Castillo delivers a powerful, increasingly relevant novel about the promise of the American dream and the unshakable power of the past. In a voice as immediate and startling as those of Juan O'Diaz and Novila de Bulawayo, America Is Not the Heart is a sprawling, soulful telenovela of a debut novel. With exuberance, muscularity, and tenderness, here is a family saga, an origin story, a romance, a narrative of two nations and the people who leave home to grasp at another, sometimes turning back. Or Like a Love Story by Abdi Nazaminian. It's 1989 in New York City, and for three teens, the world is changing. Reza is an Iranian boy who has just moved to the city with his mother to live with his stepfather and stepbrother. He's terrified that someone will guess the truth he can barely acknowledge about himself. Reza knows he's gay, but all he knows of gay life are the media's images of men dying of AIDS. Judy is an aspiring fashion designer who worships her uncle Stephen, a gay man with AIDS who devotes his time to activism as a member of ACT UP. Judy has never imagined finding romance, until she falls for Reza and they start dating. Art is Judy's best friend, their school's only out and proud teen. He'll never be who his conservative parents want him to be, so he rebels by documenting the AIDS crisis through his photographs. As Reza and Art grow closer, Reza struggles to find a way out of his deception that won't break Judy's heart and destroy the most meaningful friendship he's ever known. Bonus segment. My personal favorite Goodreads list M is on is Really Underrated Books, parentheses, fewer than 1,000 ratings, close parentheses. Happy reading, everyone. This month's library tidbit is a history tidbit, specifically the history of and highlighting modern-day celebration of Pride. Pride is the celebration and recognition of LGBTQIA people and their rights. It began in New York City, but has since spread across the globe. In areas of the world where there are more LGBTQIA social acceptance and rights, Pride tends to be more of a celebration. In areas of the world where there are few or no LGBTQIA social acceptance and rights, Pride is a protest. This is a simplification, of course. There will always be some celebrating when LGBTQIA people gather together, and there will always be protest when LGBTQIA people gather together. LGBTQIA people are still fighting for basic human rights everywhere. The most famous initiating event for Pride was the Stonewall Uprising. While there had been protests in Chicago and California prior to June 28, 1969, the Stonewall Uprising is the protest that has gained the most publicity and sparked the most change. LGBTQIA people have faced a great deal of discrimination throughout modern history. For one example, in the 1960s, everyone had to be wearing at least 3 articles of clothing of their assumed, by the police, gender, and if the police decided that they were not, they were arrested and jailed. Just a reminder, clothing does not have a gender. So this was used to harass and imprison everyone in the LGBTQIA community at will, but especially the trans community. The Stonewall Inn was a popular bar for the LGBTQIA community in Greenwich Village, New York. The inn was run by the mafia, who did not particularly care who used the space as long as they were paid. It had no running water, and was in general not in great shape. It was routinely raided by the police looking to harass and imprison people for being gay or trans, or just not the right sort. On June 28, 1969, the police raided once again, but this time, something different happened. As people were being loaded into police wagons, a woman yelled to the standing crowd, "Why don't you guys do something?" And so they did. The next 3 days, the LGBTQIA community of New York protested against the hate crimes and police brutality they had been facing for their entire lives. But what started as loosely organized protesting soon coalesced into a movement and organized activism. Over the next few years, groups formed to fight in a more organized way for gay rights in society and politics. 1 year after the Stonewall Uprising, one of these groups threw what was called the Christopher Street Liberation Day March, Christopher being the street name the Stonewall Inn is on. Simultaneously, there were gay pride marches happening in Los Angeles and Chicago that year as well. Since then, every year, gay pride marches have grown and spread across the U.S. to across the globe. Locally, St. Pete Pride is the largest of the pride gatherings. The event started in 2003, after Tampa canceled their pride event. What started as a modest parade down Central Avenue has grown into a months-long celebration, with multiple events highlighting different groups of people within the LGBTQIA community. While the mayor at the time would not sign a proclamation, the now current mayor and then city council member, Rick Kreisman, did sign a proclamation for the event. In 2017, the parade route was moved from the Grand Central District to the downtown waterfront, a controversial move. Grand Central is the center of the LGBTQIA community in downtown St. Pete, and moving it away from that area felt like a mistake to some members of the community. One of the more enjoyable things COVID has brought to us is the expanding of Pride from a single weekend or week to an entire month's worth of events. Because we could not gather in large numbers, St. Pete Pride innovated and created events spread out through the month that allowed members of the community to attend only events that most interested them, while keeping numbers down and keeping people as safe as possible. The events that St. Pete Pride has scheduled this month were on June 1st, the kickoff party, queerioke on June 11th, a Stonewall reception on June 17th, Family Day on June 18th, Shades of Pride on June 19th, a joint Pride and Juneteenth celebration. The Pride Parade will take place on June 25th, and the Pride Street Carnival on June 26th. You can find more information about these events on the St. Pete Pride's website. Make sure to double-check if they are ticketed or not. Largo is also having its own first community Pride event. Make sure to watch out for marketing materials for that, as this podcast is being recorded before the final details are released. We are also going to be marching in the St. Pete Pride Parade on June 25th, so come out and celebrate with us. LGBTQIA people have been fighting for rights, and one of those rights is the right to be visible in communities. In a world that is increasingly hostile to LGBTQIA people, Pride is a time for the community to support and celebrate each other. It is about coming together to celebrate and being visible and proud in identity. Pride is welcoming to everyone, so if you aren't a member of the LGBTQIA community, but are an ally, please come out to uplift LGBTQIA people. And now it's time for Book Traveler, with Victor.
Bienvenidos a una nueva edición de Viajero de Libros. Hoy les estaré hablando de un libro nuevo en la colección en español, que se titula Los Profetas, por Robert Jones Jr. Resumen. Isaías era de Samuel, y Samuel era de Isaías. Había sido así desde el principio, y habría de ser hasta el final. En el establo cuidan de los animales, pero también el uno del otro, transformando la construcción hueca en un espacio de cohibo humano, una fuente de intimidad y esperanza en un mundo gobernado por crueles patrones. Sin embargo, cuando un hombre mayor, también esclavo, pretende ganar favores predicando en la plantación el evangelio del amo, los cautivos empiezan a volverse contra los suyos. El amor de Isaías y Samuel, tan sencillo en otros tiempos, se ve ahora como algo pecaminoso y un claro peligro para la armonía de la plantación. Con un lirismo que nos recuerda de Toni Morrison, Robert Jones Jr. evoca con pasión las voces de amos y esclavos por igual, desde las de Isaías y Samuel hasta las del calcuador patrón o la larga estirpe de mujeres que los rodean, mujeres que han llevado siempre a sus espaldas el alma de la plantación. Conforme la tensión aumenta, y el peso de los siglos, de los antepasados y de las generaciones que están por venir, acaba en un juicio culminante. Los Profetas va revelándonos con maestría el dolor y el sufrimiento que supone el legado, aunque también hay hueco para la esperanza, la belleza y la verdad, en el retrato que hace el poderoso y heroico poder del amor. Mi opinión. Los personajes principales, Isaías y Samuel, están en una plantación del sur, y están encargados de un establo que se convierte para ellos en un refugio dentro del infierno que viven. Aunque lleven todo el peso del protagonista, ellos se apoyan en las mujeres de la plantación, donde Sara quizás sea la que mejor refleje y conserve el pasado mágico y matriarcal. Los esclavos trabajan hasta cansarse, los castigos físicos son inhumanos y las mujeres son violadas de manera sistemática, con el fin de que queden embarazadas y proporcionar futura mano de obra esclava. En este contexto, la relación entre Isaías y Samuel se genera incomprensión y desprecio entre otros esclavos, que temen repercusiones para todos ellos si su relación llegara a oídos de los amos. Afortunadamente, también reciben la empatía y el cariño de otros. El autor no se centra únicamente en sus protagonistas, sino que traza un relato de muchos de los que se encuentran en la plantación. Una vez leí la sinopsis de la novela y el marco histórico en el que estaba encuadrada, supe que sería una novela que me gustaría. Pero ha sido una novela muy dolorosa, ya que puedes sentir la rabia contenida de la comunidad afroamericana. En la novela, el autor nos muestra los momentos más íntimos, los sentimientos y los pensamientos más profundos y confusos de los personajes. Somos testigos de amores sin género, solo sentimientos de rebeldía, de rituales ancestrales, que son abruptamente interrumpidos por los hombres sin piel, que son los hombres blancos, y son implantados nuevos rituales y un dios omnipotente, que se contradice constantemente. Ha habido momentos en la trama que me ha resultado muy duro. El autor no se preocupa de hacer la trama más suave. De lo contrario, te lo da crudo y así somos conscientes del dolor más profundo que puede sentir el ser humano. Este tipo de lectura puede ser muy necesaria. Las partes que me han resultado confusas son las que enlazaban con el pasado espiritual de las tribus, con los espíritus ancestrales, que si no conoces te puedes perder en la trama. Y lo que más me ha gustado es el peso que se le da a las sociedades matriarcales primitivas, donde las mujeres llevaban todo el peso de la tribu y donde el amor no se definía por el género, ni siquiera el género era definido. Esta lectura queda muy recomendada para leer y reflexionarla. Es todo por hoy, hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Here are some upcoming library events to keep track of. July 1st, Family Trivia Night, DC Comics, at 4 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. July 5th, Happily Ever Crafter, Marvelous Mythology, at 2 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. July 6th, Intermediate Excel at 2 p.m. in the Adult Program Room. Registration is required. July 7th, Teen Write-In at 1 p.m. in the Teen Program Room. July 8th, Magical Sing-Along at 2 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. July 12th, Occupation Research at 1 p.m. in the Local History Room and on Zoom. Registration is required for the Zoom portion only. July 13th, Exploring Community Resources at 2 p.m. in the Adult Program Room. Registration is required. July 14th, Tween Time, Pineapple Nail Board Art at 4 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. July 15th, Melt Bead Mania at 1 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. July 19th, Campfire Wood Slice Painting at 6 p.m. in Jenkins Room B. Registration is required. July 20th, Adult Sign Language Beginner at 6 p.m. in Jenkins Room A. July 22nd, Robot Invasion at 2 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. July 25th, Dye Yellow with Osage Sawdust at 6 p.m. in the Adult Program Room. Registration is required. July 26th, DNA Basics 3, Ancestry.com at 11 a.m. in Jenkins Room C. July 27th, Getting Started with YouTube at 2 p.m. in the Adult Program Room. Registration is required. July 28th, Code Squad at 4 p.m. in the Steam Spot. Registration is required. Have a great month, everyone. We hope to talk to you again soon. It's 18 night. Okay. I said I wasn't going to have to do a lot of editing this time. It's 18. Nope. Again, wrong. It's 1989.